passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. This we hear from John and Waitin. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
It is Rewind to Dynamite time. John Pollock and Wei Ting here on Wednesday, May the 22nd. Hello, Wei.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing swell.
Swell. Good. Good. Yes. Enjoying the weather?
It was very nice out today. It was like over 25 or something like that.
It's gorgeous today. Yeah.
Yeah, it was out. It was, it was super hot out today. It was just out. It was, feels very hot just for May.
I'm kind of grateful that, like, you know, we don't have this weather year round. It makes me like it more. You know, it makes it feel more special.
I agree. I never would want year round warm weather. I know some people that they think we're crazy because we have the winter and stuff, but I agree. It kind of makes
life is about everything in moderation.
Variety, yes. You know, if you get that cold, you could always have a flamethrower at your disposal to keep you warm in those, you know, December, January, February
months. Costco.
Of course, yes. Yeah. We'll get to that. Flamethrowers, blood baths, all the staples of a go-home episode for a pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Were you ready to spend money after this Dynamite?
Well, I've already spent it, but...
Do you feel happy about that purchase after tonight's episode?
I mean, Dynamite or AEW pay-per-views have at this point really established, I think, a great track record. So whether or not this was a good go-home show, I think I probably would have purchased it anyway. Let's kind of go, you know, retrace our steps and ask me the question at the end of the review.
We'll make a decision at the end of said
sure.
show. Well, Wei and I have both been busy over the last 24 hours. Wei was back with the wellness policy on Tuesday with a... the non-birthday boy, Jordan Goodman, and Neil Flanagan, the C-3PO of post-wrestling.
I'm always impressed that you listen.
I'm always hovering, okay? I'm always lingering and paying attention to what's what. You know, I'm down to the final hour of the NWA podcast from Sunday.
Amazing. Wow. Oh, amazing.
It is cool. Amazing for the fact that I always enjoy the... Well, before we start to wrap up and looking at how much time, this was the all-timer where Andrew, who was adamant about not going a certain amount of time, said, well, we're definitely not going crazy tonight because all we have left are the predictions for the two pay-per-views. And I'm looking down, and I'm not kidding, an hour and 57 minutes was left as they were stating, we're going to wrap up with this topic.
But all of it gold, right?
It was. Kendrick Lamar was a big hit with Nate. He loved that. All his releases, but that's from Sunday. And then the aforementioned wellness policy, open calls, always fun, discussing any and all topics, everything under the sun. And the callers, they never disappoint on the wellness policy.
No, never, ever.
Nor do the graphics, by the way.
Well, that is a group effort, as always. But thank you for listening, John. Yeah, we always have a good time. Nothing really sort of focused in particular. And those actually end up being our favorite shows typically.
Well, today I was up with Brandon Thurston, and we did a pretty extensive show today. 90 minutes going over WWE's relationship with Saudi Arabia, which looks like they will be expanding the relationship over the next coming months, according to Mark Shapiro. And we had a guest on the show, Bradley Hope. He's the co-author of a book that came out a few years ago called Blood and Oil. Some relaxing, a relaxing beach read, if you take the time out to read all about the rise of MBS in Saudi Arabia. So that is on. Plus, we talked about the Mark Shapiro speech that he had at the JP Morgan conference this past Monday and all the other news that's going on. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has become a regular character on these shows and everything else that is going on. This is where I just wait for you, Wei. If you want to weigh in on Ken Paxton, you can do it afterward.
I just there's just like whole other like very interesting universe that I think you and Brandon have like started to develop of like this cast of characters that I don't think you'll find any other wrestling podcast. Like you'll never hear them repeated, at least, you know, and maybe treated with such I don't know, interest. I love it. Like, when are you gonna sell the Ken Paxton t-shirt on Chop Tees?
I don't know, because they might come after us and with a records request then of like our sales and such, and I would maybe have to withhold those records.
That could be a t-shirt. Everything you just said, just transcribe that, put that on a shirt.
Well, all of that can be found over at postwrestling.com, and a look ahead to the next couple of days. Postwrestlingcafe.com. We will be dropping a new Rewind Away on Thursday. We're going back to 2012, which, if you can believe it, is 12 years ago, when Brock Lesnar took on John Cena, a kind of a miniature version of Satnam Singh, Bryan Danielson, from Chicago, Illinois, with Brock Lesnar's first match in WWE since his return from the UFC. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the rematch after Bryan Danielson and Sheamus had their 18-second match the following pay-per-view. They got a 2 out of 3 falls match, so we'll talk about the less remembered, maybe, of the two. Plus, CM Punk taking on Chris Jericho in a Chicago street fight. That's on this card. And, of course, Brodus Clay versus Dolph Ziggler. All that coming your way on Extreme Rules. We will also talk about the news headlines from that week, but there is a lot to get into on this show. And I don't want to disclose too much, but I was just shaking my head 12 years ago at the finish of that main event. Let's see how that finish holds up in my estimation some 12 years later.
Mm. It's a very well-remembered match. I wonder.
Pretty brutal match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shocking at the time even.
I would say so, yes. So all of that's going to be covered on Thursday. And then we go into Friday night, Rewind to SmackDown in its usual time, 10 Eastern. And that's going to be the SmackDown taking place from Saudi Arabia.
That is correct. Yeah, very interesting show. Yeah, so John and I will be there to cover it Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, and then into Saturday. We'll be back on the free feed for our King and Queen of the Ring post show.
Yeah, Wei is going to overdose on John Pollock this coming weekend, because we are going to be up Friday night. We'll be up Saturday afternoon-ish around 4 or so when that King and Queen of the Ring show ends, and then we'll cap it off Sunday night after Double or Nothing for everybody. So we will be going live as soon as Double or Nothing is in the books.
Quick mention here, of course, we also have Collision Course happening in the Post Wrestling Cafe. Kate and Cena will have AEW Collision right before Double or Nothing covered in the Post Wrestling Cafe feed. Also, the return of MCU Later. You're going to be hearing a lot of MCU Later these several weeks, because Rich and WH are beginning a new project where they're going to be reviewing every Wolverine and Deadpool appearance in film in the lead up to Deadpool and Wolverine. So they're starting this week with Days of Future Past, the X-Men film from the prequel trilogy featuring Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. It's one of my favorites, one of my favorite comic book movies, period. So they're going to start with that. And then I believe next week they're going to start with X-Men 1 all the way up until Deadpool 2. So tune in for that in the Post Wrestling Cafe on MCU Later Thursday evening.
Wow. This Deadpool Wolverine movie, I mean, we're about 2 months out from the release. Are you going to invite me when you and your friends go to watch this? Will I get the invite?
I don't think you want an invite. I don't think you want that invite, truthfully, John. But you're welcome to join me and my wife when we go to the movies.
Oh, I thought this would be more of a I thought this would be like a WH and crew outing. Maybe that's going to be a no.
I believe Rich Van is actually coming to Toronto for
he is
several things, but mainly to watch that movie with WH Park. So I think you can invite yourself.
Interesting. Well, I got invited to something else from those two, but not to the movie. So I don't know if I should take that as a sign of I'm not welcome, but
just
I
might up. Just
I am the kind of person to just show up uninvited. Yeah. That's I'm okay with that. Well, check all of that out at the Post Wrestling Cafe, your one-stop shop for everything Wolverine, Deadpool related in the lead up to this film that comes out July the 26th.
You're going to hear those guys every single week as they talk about such great films as X3, X-Men United, Wolverine Origins, maybe the greatest comic book movie of all time. I can't wait to hear WH talk about that one.
For someone that didn't follow any X-Men as a child, I saw a fair amount of the movies that have come out going back to the one in 2000, the first one that came out. I saw Days of Future Past. I saw the first one. I saw some others in there too. They clearly left a lasting impression on me. I remember enjoying Days of Future Past.
The timeline gets very messy, so I don't blame you for forgetting.
Well, let's get into a few news items. We don't have a ton here to go with. And for people that were looking ahead to the end of August and the back-to-back pay-per-view weekend experiment from AEW, well, it looks like they are ending that back-to-back experiment after 1 year, because AEW, according to PW Insider and Fightful, and they've updated their AEW tick site to reflect the new date, are moving it from Sunday, September 1st to Saturday, September 7th. So instead of 1 week between All In and All Out, there will be a 2 week gap, which I would still argue is really turning around excessively quick. But it is an extra week. It's going to be at the Now Arena, Hoffman Estates, Illinois. And I mean, last year, I remember All Out being an incredible show. It just came a week after All In. And as we recall, they didn't even have like the bundling option to be able to buy both shows. And I think that's maybe a limitation that they had with some of their with their providers, because you would think like that would be the goal of something like that, is give a discount and people are just going to buy both shows. And we'll see if that's the exact same this year, but it's a 2 week turnaround and we will see what the response is like this year.
Yeah. After last year, I think we had all wondered if, you know, now, like last year, I think maybe some of us were thinking, okay, like was Wembley always going to be a part of the schedule? Was it something, you know, I don't know. What limitations did they possibly have? And this must have been some sort of like last resort, you know, to have these two shows so close together.
They're also that, benefiting. Like, I just remembered the WWE Germany show is on the Saturday, August 31st, I believe. I believe it's that last weekend. So they're at least not running the same weekend as a WWE PLE as well. Sure. So that is one benefit to moving another week as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's I'm somebody who's going to be purchasing all of these anyway. And I'm going to be using my VPN to purchase them. So it doesn't make a big difference to me. But for, you know, your typical viewer who only has so much attention for professional wrestling, is 2 weeks going to be enough of a buffer for them, you know? And in terms of build and just like building hype for the second show coming off of All In, will they have enough time this year compared to last? You know, hopefully the 1 week gap at the very least will space it out and hopefully make that a bit easier.
Yeah, I would have a very different thought on this if we were talking about them being on a streamer. But it is, you know, they're still requiring you to buy these shows on their own. And I think that makes it's really tough to sell two pay-per-views to people in such a quick amount of time. Although it wasn't like it was a bomb last year when they tried this. Like, they did an incredible number for All In, and they did a satisfactory number for All Out, and that was with the week in between. And of course that week was all eyes on CM Punk and the fallout from All In as well, which maybe they'll celebrate the anniversary of this year. Someone not celebrating is Francesco Acquira, who is now out of the Best of the Super Juniors tournament. He has been dealing with a knee injury, and he missed Tuesday's show, where he was supposed to be on an undercard tag match. And then today, he was officially pulled, so he missed the match with Hiromu Takahashi on today's show, and he will forfeit his other matches with Doki, Show, and Robbie Eagle. So hopefully it's not too significant of a knee injury, but to be pulled out of a tournament like this where it is booked down to the last match, it would have to be pretty significant to pull him out of the tournament. But after today's show, which was down to 9 matches instead of 10, we've got Titan and El Desperado on top of the A block with 10 points, and then we have a 3-way tie for second with Hayata, Blake Christian, and Clark Connors with 8. The B block has a logjam at the top with Robbie Eagles, Drilla Maloney, Kushida, Taiji Ishimori, and Hiromu, all with 8 points, and below them is Sho, tied with Doki with 6 points. So they have the next couple of days off. They won't return until Sunday, and it's another 9-match show that includes El Desperado against TJP and Hiromu Takahashi against Robbie Eagles in the top 2 matches. But we are getting closer, as it will wrap up with the finals are June 9th, but we are going to get the block finals on June the 3rd as we wind down that tournament. WWE is going back to Japan in July. They have not been to the country since before the pandemic, and they've announced 3 shows, July 25th at Edeon Arena in Osaka, which is going to be just days after New Japan is running the same building with the first 2 nights of the G1. So that's going to be interesting for that market. And then WWE will do 2 nights, July 26th and 27th at Sumo Hall in Tokyo. And they are advertising, this could change, but as of now, they're advertising Cody, Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, Shinsuke Nakamura, Asuka, Kairi Sane, and Io Sky as the top talent on this show or series of shows.
Yeah, I really wish we could watch these shows. They did that 1 year with they made a special out of Beast in the East, and I believe they only showed a few matches from that. But I would just love to see these shows in full just to kind of see what these crowd reactions would be like. But, I mean, I understand, you know, logistically, maybe getting a full production up there, probably not too
easy. They need their broadcast partner, Abima, to come in. And, these would totally be shows that you'd be curious just to see, especially like the reactions and such, and working in Sumo Hall, for instance. Anyway, they are probably going to do very well being in the country, but this is right smack in the middle of G1 season as well. Raw on Monday did 1,733,000 viewers and a 0.56 in the demo. So they were second for the night behind the NHL with Game 7 of the Canucks and Oilers. And Raw was up 9% in viewers, their highest numbers since April 15th. And this was going against not just the Canucks and Oilers game, but also the WNBA game with Caitlin Clark playing. In Canada, these were interesting numbers. They were up 11% in viewers this week, and they were up 35% in the 25 to 54 demo. And this was against the Canucks and Oilers. That this game did 1,656,000 in the U.S. In Canada, it did 3,249,600 viewers, which is nuts for a hockey game in Canada, especially not involving the Toronto Maple Leafs. But it tells you two Canadian teams in the 7th game, what it meant. And the fact is, Raw was up this week. So I thought that was very impressive with how well they did in Canada. They were 6th among sports programs for the night. And then NXT doing 654,000 viewers on Tuesday night, which was up 15%, but the demo dropping 7% to a 0.17. They were against a massive basketball game with the Pacers and Boston Celtics doing between ESPN, ESPN2, and ESPN Deportes. This did 6.48 million viewers, which was the largest Eastern Conference final game since 2018. So fact was, their viewership was up. Their demo was down slightly, but given the size of this basketball game, this was very heavy competition that they were up against. So basketball, especially in the U.S., is now heating up now that they're down to the conference finals. But that is the ratings report. And for all people out there that are just sick of us talking about these television ratings, like, what about all the other countries out there? Well, we don't forget about all the other countries out there because of the novel experiment, the novel invention that is NordVPN, you can experience wrestling from any country.
Whether or not you host a wrestling podcast, it can be difficult keeping up with every show as a wrestling fan. A must-have in our viewing process here at Post is access to AEW Plus, a service only available in the US and Canada through a trusted VPN like NordVPN. All editions of Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision Live without dealing with the TV network's buggy app and extra fees, watch matches commercial-free, pause and rewind live, and access shows on demand as soon as the event ends. But my favorite use of a VPN like Nord's is the ability to unlock cheaper prices for pay-per-views in other countries. In the US, purchasing Double or Nothing will cost you about $50, but switching your location to the UK using NordVPN allows you to purchase the event for half the price at $25, $20 if you're an AEW Plus subscriber. A NordVPN subscription costs less than $3 a month when you sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, where you get 4 bonus months on top of all 2-year plans. So you're essentially spending $3 to save at least $25. Again, sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling. They even have a 30-day money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied. Visit our link, get your bonus months, and tell Nord you found them through us.
Beautiful as always, Wei. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Support our friends at Nord who help us get through the weekly wrestling grind. Tonight, Dynamite going to Bakersfield, California, the Mechanics Bank Arena in front of what WrestleTix reported, 2,303. This is their first time running this building. That was not a great figure. Not to say this audience was low key. I mean, they definitely got up for several of the matches, but man, for first time in Bakersfield and 2,300 people, I thought that was a very disappointing number.
Yeah. What can you say? It's sort of indicative of
they missed all of this Mad Max Furiosa integration into the show from the opening. We got some videos for this.
Well, hopefully that integration made them some of that extra money they would have probably lost out on by not selling enough tickets.
Yeah, but then you also have a pyro budget to also
that is true.
Pay and down a blood, after the show.
Blood budget.
That's true. Or whatever the hell fell on Malakai Black. I mean, it was we might break down what that substance was.
Yeah. But yeah, we got a Furiosa opening here to start this Dynamite, just, you know, clips from the new movie sort of spliced into their typical Dynamite opening. It's interesting to see them like try to find new ways to, you know, make money, much like how WWE is right now.
First match was Roderick Strong and Trent Beretta against Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy. And they mentioned the history of Ospreay and Cassidy having that match at the first Forbidden Door show, which was an excellent match. And Bennett and Taven, they're distracting, and it leads to a backbreaker onto Ospreay by Strong, and then a gutbuster to Orange across the turnbuckle. Trent then tries for a pile driver on the steps, but Will sends Strong into the barricade and stops the pile driver from happening. After Ospreay is tagged, he hits a sky twister press, followed by Cassidy's elbow off the top onto Roderick Strong, which was a nice spot that the two had. Trent then does a suplex off the turnbuckle. Will lands on his feet, and there's a diving DDT by Cassidy onto Trent. Bennett and Taven again get involved, and Don Callis is on commentary, and he gets up, and he grabs the leg of Cassidy to prevent the end of heartache, and then leads to a stun dog onto Strong, followed by the Os Cutter. Taven and Bennett run into the ring. The rope is pulled down, so they crash to the floor. Will hits a big Tope Con Hero, and then Wardlow runs down, attacking Ospreay on the ramp, and Strong ducks the Orange Punch. There's a knee strike by Trent, and the end of heartache, pinning Orange Cassidy at 12 minutes and 57 seconds. It got really wacky at the end with all the run-ins and such, but I still thought this was like a really strong opening tag that these four had. I mean, this was just kind of a 13-minute showcase for these four to just go wild with a bit of overbooking at the end.
Yeah, I agree. I thought like in ring, really excellent wall coordinated action from all four of these guys. You felt the cohesion, not just from the teams themselves, but between all four. Ospreay, as usual, is really extra spectacular. But I thought Cassidy continues to, especially in a tag team setting, he's able to incorporate a lot more of the gimmick in there in ways that just works. You know, you feel sympathetic for him, and it perfectly sets up Ospreay's big comebacks to with his flips and all that. So they did a good job of putting attention onto both matches, and, you know, the heels got the win in this instance, as they should.
I think the Orange Cassidy character is going to be an interesting one to watch with this Trent feud, and more so beyond, of like now the best friends, you've kind of separated them, and does Orange Cassidy kind of stay in this role where he's like your reliable guy that you can plug into all of these spots? Is there any adjustments Stacy making with him that you can go further with an Orange Cassidy than sort of this this perceived ceiling that he has from like that real top mix in the company that we've seen?
I think if Tony saw that, I think they would have executed that a year ago, you know, when he lost the international championship after he went on that incredible run and was arguably the hottest he's been, main eventing All Out. At least, I guess not a year ago. At this point, it would have been, 8 months or something. And you never saw them evolve him beyond that, beyond sort of this space, you know, like up low main eventer, like upper mid card type of tier. His promos, I think, you know, have become a bit more dynamic, but now he's having to compete with people like Swerve, people like Will Ospreay, who can just offer so much more as like characters who can do a lot more. So unless they completely like change the character or at least like make him speak and act with a lot more tools, it's hard for me to see them like... I don't think they have as much maybe hopes for him being like a world title level guy, at least not in this incarnation, in my opinion.
There was a post-match attack where they throw Ospreay into the ring. The Undisputed Kingdom nail him with a belt shot, and this busts open Ospreay. And we see Trent on the floor with a go-go plata to Cassidy. And then another end of heartache is hit onto Ospreay. And Strong ends the segment by wiping Will's blood across his chest. I thought this was a very strong post-match angle for a program that, or at least a match for Sunday, that I think did kind of need this extra oomph to it. Because... yeah. I think there's no one that is doubting you're going to get an excellent, probably 18 minutes out of these two, but it didn't feel like it's not like a dream match scenario for a Will Ospreay on his second official pay-per-view since signing.
I agree. Nor is the championship, I think, that valued of a prize, you know, in all of this. It's not like Will Ospreay has really kind of set his sights on, like, he's never told us he really wanted to win the international championship. This is more of a feud about what Roderick Strong never liking Will Ospreay throughout their years of working together in various promotions. But the match is going to be good. You know it's going to be good. And I was already sold, I think, from the moment they announced it.
The Young Bucks are with security, and they've drawn up these posters that Darby Allin, who they have already shown on their social media stuff, he's in the city, but he is banned from the building. And Matt had a great line here. He just got Final Destination a few weeks ago, and he's a very resilient guy. And then Sanjay Dutt walks in and says that Satnam Singh is going to destroy Bryan Danielson, and the Bucks tell him that if he beats him, great, or if he beats him, good, but if he hurts him, great, with the idea we really do not care about the win or the loss. It's just take out Danielson, with the story that Darby's banned from the building, FTR are selling their beatdown from Collision, and Danielson's all by himself tonight, except for, well, John Moxley, who was... in the building, and then I guess left the building, and Claudio, who I guess is not, he's back to, he's not participating or encouraging this anarchy in the arena.
And I guess Moxley has taken the same stance.
I guess.
Or at least he just doesn't choose to get involved.
Yeah, I guess that was it. Moxley doesn't seem like the cautious type. The Bang Bang Gang came out, and they call themselves the greatest three-man team, and they brag about the beatdown they delivered to Pac as they debate how to pronounce his name and go over all the mistakes that he made, including begging them to make Pac care. Well, did we make you care? So Pac appears on the screen, and he admits, I provoked you, but 3-on-1 isn't fair. So the lights go out, and Pac appears in the arena with Penta and Phoenix, Death Triangle, reuniting, and they want a title shot at Double or Nothing. Later, we would get the response from the Bang Bang Gang that it's a non-title match for the pay-per-view, but this might change on Collision. So you're led to believe this will be a title match, but not until Saturday.
Right, yeah. So this is because they have rankings, and they do have trios rankings. and Death Triangle, because they've been inactive, are not ranked, so they have to come up with some excuse. And I guess beating the champions on so you can bypass the rankings if you win an eliminator. Is that right? Not to say this is an eliminator, because this is a tag team match. But it's up to the discretion of the champions to just grant the championships opportunities, I guess.
They have a lot of leeway.
I don't even care. You could have just made this a championship match from the get-go, and I don't think I would have minded so much. But it's because they have these rankings that they have to kind of jump through all these hoops to create these sort of excuses. But whatever. It's great to see the Death Triangle back. I think they are a very valuable commodity in this trios division. It's good to see Rey Fénix back. He hasn't wrestled in almost a month after his return match against Beast Muertos, and he got pulled.
Sign when your return match is also your farewell match for a while.
Oh goodness, yeah, because he got pulled from the House of Glory show, where Penta actually
was going to wrestle Penta.
That he wasn't medically cleared, so it looks like he did physicality tonight, so it seems like he's okay. And obviously, you know, if he's announced for matches this Saturday and Sunday, let's see how healthy he is. Hopefully he stays perfectly fine.
Hook, Katsuyori Shibata, and Brian Keith, with the winner getting the shot against Chris Jericho at the pay-per-view. Jericho's on commentary, and Taz scolds him about the For the World branding of this title. Shibata applies a figure four onto Brian Keith, and Hook breaks it up using strikes. Keith manages a tiger driver, and then Shibata stops that, boots both guys in the corner, hits sliding drop kicks, and Keith does a diamond dust onto Hook. Shibata follows with the PK Ushiguroshi to Keith and applies the figure four when Hook returns to the ring and simultaneously applies the red rum to Brian Keith. And poor Brian Keith, this guy's got to tap out to both of these guys' submissions. And I mean, if ever we just could have just keyed him as the fall guy, that's what Brian Keith's role was in this match. Yeah. And it was just totally divorced from the whole story. It was like, we're literally putting this guy in the ring so that we don't have to beat one of these guys. And they ended up putting both of them over because Hook and Shibata were declared co-winners, and they're both going to face Chris Jericho at Double or Nothing for the title. I wish that they just came to this conclusion. This would have saved so much time at the 94 Royal Rumble. If Bret and Luger, there's, you both win, you both, it's a three-way match.
Yeah, yeah.
No coin tosses here, no setup.
This
matches.
Was a much quicker decision Tony made. And the way they announced it was almost kind of odd, because like Jericho almost kind of jumped the gun by saying...
He did jump the gun. He announced the match before Schiavone could announce that he got a text from Tony Khan confirming the match.
Well, Tony had to save it by saying, Tony Khan texted us before Jericho got up to speak. So Jericho must have got a quick glimpse of this text message before delivering this promo.
You know, there was a moment on Saturday on the Collision show where, like, in the first hour they plugged this tag match with Trent and Roderick against Ospreay and Cassidy that they call, it's a preview of Double or Nothing with these two matches. Mm-hmm. And it was like an hour before Trent issued the challenge to Orange Cassidy for Double or Nothing.
There's a lot of juggling going on. I'm sure a lot of things being taped beforehand that have to be played at different times. It's going to be an interesting match, I think. You know, I always find it maybe a bit awkward when you have two baby faces going up against one heel. Obviously, Big Bill probably going to be a big factor in maybe balancing that.
Yeah. You know, for a Shibata match, for a Hook match, for a Jericho match, I can't say this mix is really enticing me for this pay-per-view. I didn't think this setup was all that inspiring. The Jericho promo afterwards to me really didn't hit. He was also like, you had the Schiavone piping in with the text update, and then Jericho's like battling his music starting before he's done the promo. It just was not a very effective setup for this match, I thought. Then they aired a video on the history of Willow Nightingale and Mercedes Moné going back to their match last year. You see Moné being carried to the back and then arriving at Big Business. And I don't even know if this was intentional, but I thought it was like such a interesting part of the dynamic here that we go from like this grainy, like camcorder shot of Willow Nightingale at Shimmer, boom, and we cut to a red carpet for The Mandalorian with Mercedes Moné. And I just thought it was like a nice contrast here between the two. And yeah, just going through all the angles that they've done, which feel like a dozen since she's arrived in March, ending with the powerbomb through the table last week.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mind that we didn't get to see Mercedes or Willow on this particular show. I thought they did everything they needed to last week with the powerbomb through the table. Probably more effective to show a video package like this. It's something we say all the time. You know, they do these video packages for their countdown shows, and they don't show them for the biggest audience possible. This was a case where I think I was happy to see an extended video played on Dynamite.
Then there was a video on Takeshita that was voiced by Don Callis going over his wins against Kenny Omega, Darby, and Jericho with comments from Jon Moxley. And that takes us to Takeshita against Matt Sydal. The connection here, Matt Sydal teamed with the BCC back in Mexico 2 months ago.
He's their leader.
Yeah. Where was Matt Sydal for poor Bryan Danielson later? He was selling the impact of this.
Yeah,
I mean, this was essentially a squash match where he was hit with a brainbuster. Sydal did get some offense in, but then Takeshita sidesteps, lands the Blue Thunder Bomb, and just drills him with a fist. And that was it. He beat him with, like, the iron fist and pinned him.
I really like this finish from Takeshita. To my recollection, I haven't really seen him use it at all, or at least not that much on Dynamite, where he just, like, winds up and just delivers this, like, big punch or forearm, and I love it. It's so simple. He makes it look so heavy, and, yeah, he's great. You know, this is just putting a bit of extra attention on the match, a bit of momentum behind Takeshita heading into a match that really just kind of sells itself on paper. Jon Moxley versus Konosuke Takeshita.
He offers his hand to Matt Sydal, and Sydal, I mean, just puts his arm up. He's like, oh, thanks, Konosuke. And he lifts him up and into a released German. And you know what? I'm sure Matt Sydal backstage afterwards, he's going to be replaying this in his mind. And you know what he's going to do? He's just going to look down. One person will get that. And so he's stomping down on Sydal when Jon Moxley's music plays, and Moxley just calmly comes through the crowd, gets into the ring with a microphone, and you think he's going to talk on the microphone, but instead he just blasts Takeshita with the microphone, which has become the most dangerous weapon in AEW, and just says, I'll see you at Double or Nothing. And this did not need anything more than this. I think people, the only criticism for this is the eliminator aspect to this. I don't care as much. I think we're going to get an awesome match between these two. And if anything, I think there's at least a semblance of doubt in the outcome in an eliminator, as opposed to if this were a title defense that I don't think is selling this pay-per-view.
Well, that to me is why the eliminator is a positive but not negative at all. Excalibur did mention on commentary that if Takeshita beats Moxley, he can get an IWGP championship against any champion, and Moxley doesn't have to be that champion. So to me, it just, like,
King of Pro Wrestling? Extra...
No, not the IWGP. It's the IWGP heavyweight champion, or whatever they call it these days.
Oh, I thought you meant he could just pick any title that he wants.
I mean, I'm sure he could, if he wanted a King of Pro Wrestling title shot, I'm sure he could just ask for one. He can, you know, eat enough eels to earn his way towards a title shot. But it to me does lend some believability in his possibly winning, so that he might go on to face Evil in some sort of co-branded, you know, DDT, whatever, what do they call it, All Together United, what's the thing, what's
it's the All Together show that they're doing, the second one in mid-June.
Sure. Like, I think it's at least a possibility that's in play, and the eliminator sort of I guess, you know, titling of this match allows that.
Next up was the Young Bucks. They state they know Darby's here. They repeat that he's banned from the building, and they run into Swerve, who just tells them to hit his music. And Swerve was sitting in their chair. So Swerve Strickland against Nick Wayne, non-title match, and Nick Wayne has told the Patriarchy to stay in the back, and they did throughout the duration of the match. Swerve has a bandage over his eye from last week's cut, which they did replay and was just as hideous as last week. I mean, like, literally turning on a tap and watching.
Maybe that's what they saved up to pour on Malakai Black this week.
It was comparable. So Wayne gets whipped with a belt on the floor, and this crowd is just chanting one more time. Wayne then runs the eye into the buckle, and this is where Swerve starts checking on the cut, and he ends up getting kind of rocked from, and his vision is impaired here as he's just flying all over the place. Wayne is just hitting him with jabs as a result of this, going after the eye when he hits a back suplex on the edge, and then Swerve comes back and hits the Swerve stomp off the apron to the floor. Wayne rolls into a code red after some kicks, goes for his own house call, which is caught, and a backbreaker by Swerve into a power slam, and he says, "I'm sorry," and hits the house call to win in 8 minutes and 55 seconds.
It was almost like one of those sort of like mocking "I'm sorry"s, you know, I guess for invading your home and attacking you with memories of
your father's photo.
Father. Yeah. Yeah. I like the match. You know, this was not the type of 50-50 match that I think these two probably have had or will have in the future, where you got to see both of them at their best. This was more of like a go-home show storyline type of match where that was right for the occasion. It was there to make Swerve look strong. And I think there was – I sent some effort in Swerve trying to answer criticisms of his losing his edge since turning babyface. You hear –
last week, it's been very evident he has shifted that. It's very, very noticeable.
You got to see, even just in this match, a much more sadistic side of him in trying to like attack Wayne in the exposed turnbuckle. The you know, we'll go on to talk about, but the Concerto to Christian on the chair. And then continuing to flash that like horror movie villain grin that he had throughout that heel run that we all loved so much. It's just a reminder that like when somebody turns babyface, they don't have to lose all those things. You know, we loved you because you were doing all that like sick shit, and he's slowly at least reintroducing a lot of those into this babyface persona.
It's time for him to break into some more homes,
and we'll cheer him all the more for it, as long as he's breaking into the homes of people we don't like.
Yeah, leaves t-shirts. It's like, listen, you guys allow Santa Claus in every year to do the same thing. Am I any different? So Killswitch jumps him from behind as Christian and Mother Wayne come down, and Swerve manages to low blow Killswitch, dumping him to the floor while Cage has his back turned. So he chases Cage, and on the way around the ring manages a house call onto Killswitch, but just keeps going, and they run backstage. Cage takes over a vehicle and goes to drive out when another car comes and blocks him from getting out of the parking lot, and it's Prince Nana, who is just, he's been on stakeout for this whole match, and there he is with his coffee and blocks Christian, and there was a huge pop for the return of Prince Nana. A lot of people making their drive back to television tonight.
That is correct. Bakersfield, I guess, a popular destination for at least the roster. I love the way that they shot all this, by the way. Everything was like done in one take, and like just the coordination that's required with these cars to, you know, having to kind of, you know, get in the way, the camera person, you know, having to move from the scene directly into this car to grab this wonderful shot of like Nana revealing himself. Everything was actually done really well.
Yeah, it's a great point that they did this so seamlessly. And Swerve drags Cage out of the car and rams him into a production truck, and Cage, trying to escape, decides to climb onto the car. Where he was going, I can't tell you, but Swerve stops him, and Nana hands him a chair, and he goes to deliver a concerto to Cage, who avoids it, and he was laid out on the hood and then ran off. I thought this was a pretty good angle to send you into the pay-per-view. This does not feel like the main event of your pay-per-view, but I think like each week's angle, I think, has been, you know, satisfactory. I think that they've done what you can with kind of a, I don't want to say a lame duck challenger in Christian, but I don't think anyone is suspecting a title change here. That's always a tough role with a new champion that you're establishing, that Christian has filled this role really well for the month they've had to build this up.
I don't think it was ever going to feel truly like the main event against an Anarchy in the Arena match, you know, with the Elite, who at this point are like, so, like they're in a storyline where they've taken over the entire show. It was really hard, I think, for a swerve match against Christian to feel like that. Christian just like isn't this type of serious like world champion threat that I think others have been in the past. But it's given like I think their characters and the history between the characters and the TV time that they've had, I think they've done a good job of elevating interest. And you know, like what this is more of a continued test to see how Swerve fits in this world champion role. And, you know, some controversy or at least some criticism maybe for some of those early weeks, especially the first week where he didn't do a promo on that first edition of Dynamite, and Tony ending up saying that they were saving it for that edition of Collision coming off of the NBA. Anyway... this is all to say, I think Swerve's like starting to continue to really find himself as a babyface, and this is like a good, almost like continued trial for him in this championship role. I hope next month, though, after Double or Nothing, is when we get into like the really juicy feuds. Next month, for what's the pay-per-view next month?
It's Forbidden Door. It's a tough one, right? Like they're going to have this, they're going to do this Casino Gauntlet next week, and they're pushing like international talent will be in this thing. And like you might get, like it could be like a program you can extend beyond, but it also could just be a one-off if you're taking somebody from the New Japan side.
Yeah, it needs to be New Japan talent that he's defending against, doesn't it?
It does not need to be Hiroshi Tanahashi, okay? It cannot be Hiroshi Tanahashi.
And nor does it need to be Evil or...
I don't think they'd sacrifice Evil to just... Like, this is someone that... It's like New Japan is just going to give you, like, an adequate enough challenger that they're willing to sacrifice a loss to.
So who are the options? I'm curious.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, who is at the level that I think would be satisfying for a sword match? Shingo, okay. Now it's that. That's also not a main event. So, like, do you expect Swerve to main event for Forbidden Door? And if he is going to main event, who are the likely candidates?
Given the fact that you have Ospreay and Okada, I feel they're going to put one of like their big matches involving non-champions, and that could be. Like you would have Danielson on this show as well. None of those names I suspect being paired with Swerve. So I would say the possibility of him not headlining is a very real possibility.
And that's pretty dangerous for the perception of a new champion like Swerve. Two pay-per-views in a row where he might not be main eventing. Now they might actually main event him for this upcoming Double or Nothing, you know, card. I don't throw out the idea.
Like they're promoting this as like a triple main event. And while I'd say the percentages are low, I don't think they're zero that Swerve or the Willow match would go on last.
But there's a big difference between the match that ends the show and the match that sells the show. When we're talking about the match itself,
question on what the main event is being sold as. Like that is very clear. Just what goes on last. I don't throw 0% chance that any of the other two are put there. Let's put it this way. Where would you imagine this Swerve match is placed on the card?
Second from top.
Second from the top. Do you go with your three matches as in a row to end the show?
Can you remind me, has Anarchy in the Arena closed every instance of
it? It didn't the first year.
Stadium Stampede, of course. You know.
Let's go back here then. Okay, yeah. So the first...
Because, yeah, like, if Swerve isn't...
2020, they ended with... Obviously, they ended with the first Stadium Stampede.
So while you look it up, I'll just say, if Swerve doesn't main event for Forbidden Door, he should main event Double or Nothing. And this is just, again, for the perception of being able to say, we're headlining the show with our champion. He is somebody that we believe in. And he's somebody that you should believe in and take seriously.
2022, it was the first Anarchy in the Arena, and that was third from the top, followed by a three-way tag title match, and they had Punk and Hangman headline that show. That was the infamous Vegas show. And then last year, as I look here, Anarchy in the Arena headlined last year.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, they don't have to finish with it. I think, like, you know, AEW audiences will be there for Swerve versus Cage as the final match. Mercedes, in the final spot is possible as well, but I would actually prefer Sword versus Cage over that one if it's between those two.
I think it's pretty clear you should probably close with Anarchy in the Arena, but I mean sometimes they put people in those positions to try and have to follow something like really, really, you know, that you know is going to be take the crowd up so high, and those are those positions for some of your champions that have to follow those.
We should also mention, this seems to confirm, at least for now, that Prince Nana is staying with Swerve Strickland. He's not sticking with the Mughal embassy instead. And I think that's a really good, you know, call if that is the continued sort of relationship. Like, Nana adds something to Swerve. You know, these past few weeks where Swerve's just kind of coming out by himself, even though, like, he's a clear babyface and Nana at this point is still kind of, like, ambiguous. When we're talking about presentation, we're talking about, like, you know, the dance and everything, like, Nana does add so much to the presentation. So I hope this means Nana has also turned babyface and that they are able to stay together as a unit.
Then we got our latest update on Rampage on Friday. So originally they stated 6:30 Eastern. It's now on at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, followed by the Countdown special at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And now Collision, instead of being on TNT, it's on TBS on Saturday night at 8.
Jeez, wow. Like, can you put any stock into any of these ratings, you know, when it gets ping-ponged like that?
No, I would not. No, I was impressed that Collision and Rampage did very well this past Saturday for that 3-hour block. They were taped shows, and the prior week they had been on TBS, and then this week they were back on TNT. So you had that switch as well. They did very well. But yeah, like a Rampage at 6, I'm not looking at that number with any kind of significance at all. Malakai Black against Kyle O'Reilly. This match, I love this match. I thought this match was one of my favorite matches that AEW has put on in quite some time. I loved this. And the first half of this, it's not like the crowd was into this, which didn't even bother me because, like, you were focused so much on, like, the striking battle. But this was to me kind of the core that I enjoyed about AEW was all these different styles. And every week they would tee up the lineups for the next week. And it was like, man, what is this match going to be like with this style versus this style? And just all these, this deep talent roster that you could mix and match. And this was a perfect example. Kyle O'Reilly and Malakai Black. And instead of finding some, like, pattern style to work, it was like, no, let's go out and let's do, like, a, like, pseudo, like, K1 Max style of match. And that's what they did here. Like, this was... immediately, the two are going for knees, and they drop each other with liver shots. And Black is getting swept as he comes off the middle rope. Malakai Black is, like, checking leg kicks here. And Taz is just stating flat out, I love this. I think we need more of this. And he's comparing it to Pancrase. And, I mean, Taz is just having the time of his life calling this. Excalibur's getting into it, too. He's mentioning, like, Peter Arts and Ernesto Host. There's a dragon screw by Black and then puts pressure on the thigh, then goes for another dragon screw. But this time, Kyle O'Reilly is ready for it, blocking it as he tries for the armbar, but can't get it. So he goes to knees from the clinch, does an arm wringer, sending Malakai's arm straight into the mat. And at this point, like, again, this crowd was very subdued for this match, and all of a sudden a This Is Awesome chant begins out of nowhere.
I got the sense it was very much like a Japanese reaction where they were quiet but they were also focused, you know, and technical wrestling, even though this wasn't, like, as submission heavy as, like, maybe our sort of definition of technical wrestling. This was technical striking wrestling. Yes. When you're focused on technique, you're not necessarily making noise. You are focused. You're watching every single leg kick. You're watching the blocks. You're watching the sort of patterns that they're setting up and the fake outs and everything. It was a very different style of match, but I think a very, like, smart one. And I thought the crowd was with them.
This felt like you were watching a, like, fight at the apex. And I don't even say that in a negative way, but especially early in the pandemic, it was like, okay, we're now watching fights in this different environment. But it was not the negative watching MMA, because you're getting other aspects that kind of contributed to the presentation. And I did not think that the, like, the crowd was like, it didn't deter from this at all. And mm-hmm. you could be very right that it was just the people were focused on this. But O'Reilly mounts him, but Black clasps the hands to block. So he moves to an ankle lock, and Black is balancing on one foot to get up and lands this jump knee and a brain buster, but only gets it's a two count. They get to their feet and a spinning elbow rocks Kyle O'Reilly. The two simultaneously land head kicks and both men are staggering. And this finish, Black feints a head kick and sets up the end and connects with it and pins him in 10 minutes and 17 seconds. This finish was incredible. I love this match. This was by far my match of the show by leaps and bounds. I hope they explore more of this kind of stuff, because I thought this was such a just such a different presentation of a wrestling match.
You can't really do this match with too many people. You know, if you could.
Satnam Singh, Brian Danielson should have been taking notes, because this could have been topped in the main event.
You need people with like legit training backgrounds, at least, you know, in kickboxing, in order to pull something like this off. And yeah. I feel like we would have seen like this from Malachi Black earlier if that was the case. I'm just glad that these two got to go out there and got to do something creatively fulfilling for the two of them without worrying so much about whether or not the crowd was going to get into it, because this sort of thing was a risk, you know? Like, I mean, doing a shoot style, essentially like kickboxing sort of simulation for a pro wrestling audience is not necessarily something that will immediately translate. We saw Shayna and Ronda try a version of shoot style and that completely failed. This was done, I think, in a much, much better way. Maybe the type of crowd kind of, you know, helped as well. But this was just like an incredibly like great pro wrestling adaptation of kickboxing techniques. The finish too, I absolutely loved.
Oh, you know? It was like it's the type such of one a where, smart, like just to think of that finish, I just thought it was great.
Yeah. Again, risky and requires so much like wonderful timing to make look real. Like you and I anybody can probably write, okay, let's try to like, I'm going to go for this kick. You're going to mimic my pattern and then I'm going to feint. You're going to, you know, think I'm going to kick you and then I'm going to go for the head. It's exactly like how like so many MMA sequences or kickboxing sequences would go. But to be able to replicate that and make it look real, knowing it's coming it requires that much like incredible skill that I don't understand at all. So a huge credit to both of these men for doing something different, executing it flawlessly. And yeah, I'd love to see more of this stuff, you know, navigated within the system, AEW, but how many people could pull it off this well?
Maybe not AEW, but I think like a Bloodsport, like this would be like so much of it. It's like, high end
too. Like there aren't many people, I think. Well, again, who could put the wrestling
at this level? Probably not too many.
Pro wrestling with the shoot technique together. Like you have guys who come from one background. You have great like former MMA fighters who are able to kind of try professional wrestling. You have professional wrestlers who are maybe dabbling in MMA, but guys that can put it together this well, it's very rare, I think.
Well, and Kyle O'Reilly has shown he might be the very best in terms of like marrying all that together with like a pro wrestling kind of, you know, presentation around it all. But this
the Japanese blood sports show, I'm very interested in seeing, you know, see if there's. Yeah.
Yeah. Just absolutely go out of your way to watch this match, even if you're not like super into like kickboxing. I think just to watch what they tried, and maybe this wasn't everyone's cup of tea, but it was definitely mine. And I just thought this was like, I was watching this and I was captivated from the beginning. And I just thought, I felt like I was Taz during this match. And I think he just got it was a trip for him to be calling this. And then afterwards, we couldn't have more of a
different blood sport.
We go right back to our professional wrestling programming. The lights flicker as Malachi is left in the ring and he gets torpedoed with a bloodbath. And this thing comes down like it was shot out of a cannon from the rafters. And all I could ever think watching this is the time in WCW that they did this and they missed the target and it dropped on the fans. And that is what I will give them credit. AEW, they hit the mark perfectly. Like, this guy got hit on top and this thing did not stop. And this looked like this needed some blood thinners, because there was like, I don't know what this concoction was made out of, but it looked like this person would need, I think, a blood transfusion if this is what was going through their veins.
This stuff looked more like a ragu in consistency. It was like rich and thick, but it looked great. I mean, you know, if gore was sort of the intent, I mean, this completely achieved it. They certainly spared no expense in terms of volume here. So,
And they had a miraculous turnaround, because the women's match was like only a few minutes after this. It's not like they had some extended backstage scene or
they had the Danielson video, but I guess you're right. Like, it is very impressive still, you know, great job, cleanup crew.
It's also worth noting, as I think about it, is that this Dynamite, yes, there was the Buck stuff backstage, but like, there were no backstage interviews. We didn't see Renee or, what was it? Arcady Aura. We didn't see, like, there was very little backstage stuff at all on this show. And granted, they had seven matches and several in-ring segments to do, so there really was not the time for anything else. But Malakai is laid out via the bloodbath when Judgment Day Adam Copeland walks down a flight of stairs and looks into the camera. Be careful what you wish for. See you soon. And, this was his full, like, Judgment Day version that he was presenting here.
Not a very fondly remembered incarnation.
No. This brought me back to the era that I don't think is going to be the most remembered of Adam Copeland's WWE tenure.
Yeah, but, you know, he bought those. I'm sure he bought a bunch of suits for that character.
He did. He said he spent a ton on his wardrobe and stuff for the next several months of that.
Okay. Angle. Yeah. So I guess it was either this or like playing his 1997 self with like the big smile and the glasses. And this, I guess, maybe better choice these days.
Is he finally going to get his Gangrel entrance on Sunday? I don't think they can get that Brood theme, but that was the pitch he was trying for, to try and get Gangrel for an entrance.
I don't see why not. Like, what is Gangrel?
This is the time to do it. If you're going to do it in AEW, this is the match to do it.
But what would Gangrel do though in this particular feud?
I think it was just for the entrance. That was it.
Just like hang out, just like stand here, split some blood for me.
Well, I don't know. I didn't know what was in his mind for the entrance. Maybe, like, I'm sure Gangrel would be more than happy to walk down with the chalice and spit blood and then walk to the back.
Okay, yeah, why not?
Probably won't get a Christian cameo with the other two, but...
Yeah. All right.
Timeless Toni Storm and Mariah May against Saraya and Harley Knight with Zach Knight, who looks like the missing member of the Brawling Brutes now, with his hat and walking stick.
Does everybody there have, like, one of those hats? Like, is everybody there dressed like it's the 1920s? A common look there?
It's the look that has been established. It's the Chris Harrington fall line of AEW merch. Toni Storm comes out and she is wearing Serena Deeb's Deeb's dojo flag that she commandeered over the weekend on Collision. And Excalibur does bring up Willow's win against Tam Nakano at the Flashing Champions card last weekend. Saraya's tagged in. She wants Toni Storm. So Storm gets in control and scoop slams Mariah on top of Saraya. Then May does the same to Toni, but can't lift her. So Storm then scoop slams her again on top of her. And then May gets thrown into the barricade, and Storm does a drop toe hold, sending Saraya into May in the corner, follows with a sky high. And then we get simultaneous sunset bombs by Cameron and Saraya on opposite corners. Both Storm and May kick out from that, and it ends with May and Storm grabbing the opponents and making out with them, and leaving Saraya and Cameron stunned as they take the Storm Zero, the Mayday, and Cameron is sent into a Storm Zero as Storm pins Cameron.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was like a decent, entertaining match here. You know, the crowd was very engaged throughout with Storm's antics. And this was also a rare Saraya match that we got to see, period, not just, you know, on TV. And considering Saraya's, I guess, questionable like status these days. The fact that Harley Cameron is still a relatively like newcomer to like this level of AEW like wrestling, I think they did really well in this role, you know, just kind of playing the sort of almost like comedic foils to Saraya and May.
Yeah, I think that it was like it was a fine match, and the crowd, they really got into this at a certain point, like during the midway point of this. Like it was definitely a come down from the previous match, but you know, fine for what it was. Like Harley Cameron to me is like she's not like you're looking at this woman as someone that has very few matches, but this is like 3 weeks in a row, and it's not like she's going out there and there's like a spotlight on her where you're just asking why is this woman on national television. Like she's carrying like her weight in these matches, in singles matches and tag matches. So Toni Storm holds up the flag and she's about to take her top off when Serena Deeb attacks them all with chairs, and denying Toni Storm taking her top off, this was the heel turn by Serena Deeb.
I mean, I know you're saying that. At this point, I have to wonder if it's intentional, because what other reason would they design a spot like that for Serena Deeb to interrupt?
Oh, I think it was absolutely this was so clearly Serena Deeb is going into this match as the heel, this whole post-match. She uses her own shoe and nails Toni with the heel of it and puts her in a half crab through a chair as Storm is furiously tapping, and Serena Deeb reclaims her flag. Not one mention of any seizures during this particular segment. That has now just been forgotten from Serena Deeb's story. Like, she is the full-out heel, and they are telling the Las Vegas crowd, this is your baby face, treat her as such on Sunday. We are not trying to confuse the issue here.
It's actually great motivation for her to turn heel. You know, like, I spill my heart out to you guys, and all you guys can do is, like, chant for your stupid hockey teams. And, you know, like, you don't
give
a shit.
It would have been great if the Oilers had gotten eliminated and she could send that message in.
Sure. But, like, she has every reason to turn on the crowd, you know, after this past month. So
she's also a better heel as well. And Toni Storm is a better babyface. So
it's really tricky for any type of opponent for a Toni Storm. At this point, they probably are just going to turn, like, Toni Storm is probably already a babyface that they're going to continue pushing as a babyface. Don't you think? She should just be paired with other heels.
I think that's the way to go, because it's going to be an upward battle as the, like, every audience is into her, and it's not to say she can't be paired with baby faces, but it is more like there is going to be a struggle there. And this one, I think they just wanted to end any ambiguity with this segment. So Toni is laid out, and that's our final angle. Bryan Danielson and Satnam Singh, first we had the announcement of the Forbidden Door Casino Gauntlet that is returning next Wednesday. And so, as I recall, this ends with two people, and then they have a match afterwards. I think that's how it ends.
Unless it's one person.
Regardless, the winner of this gets the shot at the AEW champion at Forbidden Door. So that's happening next Wednesday at the Kia Forum in Inglewood. And then the Bang Bang Gang respond to Death Triangle, and we get the tag match for Collision, which, as we went off the air, that was the only match they announced for Collision on Saturday, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So tune in on TBS. Bryan Danielson and Satnam Singh. And first of all, this is Bryan Danielson's 43rd birthday party, and I think this was his birthday wish. And when I saw these two go nose to pelvis, I was all in. I was so looking forward to this match all day long. And I can't say it was the match that is going to change my life, but it was nonetheless. These are the kinds of matches I want to. I just want to see what is Bryan Danielson going to do with this guy.
100%. Yeah. No, this crowd. Pelvis is right. Look at. I mean.
Oh, it was enormous. The disparity. Look at this. You don't appreciate how big this guy is, because a lot of it are like these tight shots backstage where he's next to Jarrett and Lethal. It's like you can. It's not so often that you just get to use this guy for this kind of a visual.
Yeah.
But Danielson gets run.
Sorry, Brian in the chat. Thank you, as always, Brian, reminding us that the Casino Gauntlet is the one where they start with two people and they keep adding. The one that Ospreay won.
Okay, so it's a battle royal, and there's one winner at the end of it. There's no match.
It's not a battle royal. Is it pinfall? it starts with two people and then they keep adding.
Wait, this company has like 85 different battle royals. I cannot keep track of what all these different battle royals are.
Yeah, it's not a battle royal. It starts with two people. It's like the Rumble where they start with two people.
Okay, and that's a battle royal. People.
But you're not throwing people over the top rope. You're trying to get a pinfall.
Oh, okay, okay. The one they did recently with Ospreay. I understand. Correct, yeah. Okay, right, right. Okay. So then we have, this was the best part of the match, or the worst, depending on who you were in relation to this match. Danielson is thrown into the steps, and Sanjay Dutt throws all the energy drinks off the desk, which in this era might make you a babyface by tossing all these energy drinks away. And while clearing the desk, this desk collapses. These unbreakable tables that we always talk about, this thing gave up with the least amount of pressure possible, and this thing just collapsed. And I just wish I could have seen Sanjay Dutt's face as this table just completely collapsed.
Well, look at Danielson's face. Like, you got to see it there. It's like,
oh, Christ.
Fuck, what the hell?
Satnam Singh. Satnam Singh did not freeze here either, and I'm sure he was just being led by Danielson of like, hey, we're just moving on to the knees.
I love moments like this because they give you a chance to see how these performers react improvisationally on live TV. And, I mean, we know Danielson could probably handle a situation like this, but seeing Satnam in a situation like this, I think, is a great test for Satnam, and I thought he handled it really well. Now remind me, John, like, have they done spots on this AEW table before? Like, I know they toss people into them, like, they things fall off, but have they done like a full-on, like, I'm gonna, like, I don't know, power bomb you through this table on this announced table?
I'm pretty sure they have.
They have? Because I just get I forget, and I wonder if it was
how did this thing support three iPhones during this whole broadcast? I mean,
for me, like, I'm just speculating, wondering if, like, they took some sort of safety out, and because they took it out, it became super fragile.
Well, I don't know what the issue was here.
I don't know either.
It was a comical moment in this broadcast, but they just moved on. And sometimes, like, when you're in this situation, you almost have to program your brain to be like, if this were real, what would I do? If I was really putting a man through a table
if it was real, why would a table just have suddenly collapsed by you touching it?
This is the mind you have to alter your brain towards in pro wrestling logic. Yeah, so whatever. Danielson hits a series of knees off the apron and then a running drop kick to a seated Singh inside the chair, but then is caught with a choke slam onto the edge of the apron. Danielson, with Dutt distracting the ref, kicks Singh in the balls and hits a busaiku knee, runs at him again and is caught by the throat, but he rakes the eyes of Singh, kicks him in the chest, kicks him in the head, but Singh won't get down. And then, channeling Konosuke Takeshita, we just get a big punch from Satnam Singh. Is this your new favorite maneuver in pro wrestling, the punch?
I would have appreciated a bit of a bigger windup, but yeah, this was a nice punch, sure.
Well, Danielson lands on the shoulders and drops this guy with hammer and anvil elbows, getting him to the ground, and then tries for the lapel lock. As Excalibur accurately notes, it's actually easier to get on because of the size of this guy's legs and arms. And he applies the lapel lock, and you think he's about to tap when Lethal and Jarrett attack for the DQ, and thus ended this match. I'm not going to complain about a DQ finish, and was this spectacular? No, but it was, I still thought, like, a really fun match to watch and just see Bryan Danielson have a, like, 6-7 minute match with a Satnam Singh.
I found it, like, to be a captivating match. Yeah, like,
it was an experiment.
It's not a 5-star match, everybody. Like, but it's interesting to see, again, what did we say at the beginning of the show? Variety. Everything better in moderation, okay? And sometimes I want to see Bryan face like a giant here. This actually reminded me of Daniel Bryan's WWE work, where he was constantly fighting bigger opponents and wrestling this sort of underdog style, chopping his opponents down. I much prefer, like, the modern day Bryan Danielson, but I do kind of want to see him face giants once in a while, and this was almost like a, you know, but like a very well done sort of like giant chopping down type of match. Sutton, I thought, did well as well. You know, they clearly thought enough of him to protect him with this finish. So hopefully it means they're going to try this sort of thing with him again in the future.
Well, as I was curious to search here, we do have several matches involving Daniel Bryan and the Great Khali, which I would be curious to contrast these with, although I'm looking at one that
is probably way better. Like, this Sutton is way more mobile than Khali.
I'm curious how many views some of these have. So there you go. The guitar shot, they wind up. Jarrett has the guitar, but Danielson moves, and then he ends up laying out Lethal and Jarrett with knees and gets the guitar. Dutt runs into him, and Danielson misses Dutt, and Satnam Singh punches through the guitar. This was the best spot of Satnam Singh's entire match and post-match, punching through the guitar. And it's 4-on-1 against Danielson. When the Young Bucks arrive, they pay off Dutt, they take off, and the Bucks go for the EVP trigger. Danielson moves, so they crash knees, and then Okada's music plays. And as Danielson is watching Okada come down, Jack Perry jumps him from behind. Okada's in, hits Danielson with a rainmaker, and then the table by the stage is revealed, and they're going to put Danielson through this table. When all of a sudden we cut to the parking lot outside, and a vehicle pulls up, and out comes Darby Allin, who is brandishing what looks to be what I thought was Meg. Does this guy have like a paintball gun? Does this guy have a real gun? Were my thoughts. And there he fist bumps the driver, his Uber driver, Tony Khan, who I'm sure he left a 5-star review for. And in walks Darby. As the announcers explained, the ban must be lifted since Tony Khan is back. And in comes Darby. And it is not a paintball gun. It's not a real gun. The man has a goddamn flamethrower, and he comes out, and he is just lighting this arena up with this flamethrower. And the closing shot is Bryan Danielson with a chair next to this guy who is shooting like these 15-foot flames up into the arena. And that's how we went off the air. And
Darby's just also wearing like a pink fur coat, it looks like. You know, this was like, I mean, this is some sort of weird version of Scarface. It felt like it by the end here. I don't know, maybe Mad Max is what they were going for.
That might have been the tie-in here.
With Tony Khan, I guess, being the driver of the car. Maybe
it should have been Tony as Scarface.
Ah, what are you trying to say there?
Well, Tony Montana.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Quite the scene to end the show. I mean, not what I would have pictured at the start of Dynamite about how this episode would end, but it was the type of, like, I don't know, like ultimately what did we really gain here? Like, they told us a pretty predictable story of Darby getting banned and then coming back at the end to save his partner at Double or Nothing. A main event match that got DQ'd because of shenanigans, but because we saw flamethrower, like, I'm cool with it. You know, it's like, I don't know, it's like one of these sort of like weird spectacular visuals that just like, all right, that was really cool.
It's a great point. Like, they did close the show with like a 5-minute match ending in a DQ, which is clearly they have relaxed, I think, their thought on DQs being such a rarity. But this really did have to go on last for the angle as well. And I think this was totally, you know, the match was what it was. It was, I think, there was a novelty. I seriously think, like, of the whole show, what were you most curious to see on the lineup? It was this match.
Agreed.
This is the match I was most curious to watch on this whole lineup. Like, I knew other stuff would be better, but what was I most interested in seeing? It was Bryan Danielson and Satnam Singh going for 5 minutes. That's what had my curiosity.
And I thought they satisfied that curiosity, whether or not we got the finish. I know what Danielson versus Satnam looks like.
I have got that answered now. So there you go. That was Dynamite. What is the Double or Nothing pay-per-view worth after this build? What would you be willing to spend on this pay-per-view?
First, I guess we should even determine whether or not this was a good addition on Dynamite, because I think that's even kind of tough to answer. You know, like, in terms of like how we
I can see a lot of mixed reaction to this show.
In terms of how we usually grade AEW Dynamite, you had a very good match in Malakai Black versus Kyle O'Reilly, a very good tag team match in Ospreay and Orange Cassidy versus Trent and Roderick Strong. But
you know, Swerve and Nick Wayne was good for what it was. Not like the match of the show, but I thought that was fine. I didn't think the three way FTW and Angle that one really didn't do much for me. The women's tag match, fine, not anything special.
So I'm in agreement that I think the best match is Malakai Black versus Kyle O'Reilly.
100%.
But even that is very much like sort of a unique novelty match where your mileage may vary depending on how you feel about that style. So it's not really like the type of dynamite that we would usually put up with, like the great dynamites where like you had top to bottom great wrestling matches. It was a bit of a weird one that offered variety. More importantly, I think it had deservedly a lot of focus on just pushing, you know, these matches taking place at the pay-per-view. And for the most part, I thought everything was like effectively conveyed. You know what the matches are by the end. You know what the feuds are. You're caught up with all the storylines at the end of the show. And in some cases, you might even be more interested in the feuds. Now, are you interested in the feuds? That's another question. You know, this cycle of AEW programming, have they done a good job of establishing juicy feuds? In my opinion, this is still very much a card that has been entirely sold just on the matches alone, like whether, like kind of regardless of storyline. Maybe with the exception, like...
Like everything on this show has like story attached to it. It's what your opinion is of those stories, but you can't say any of these are just cold matches that are being thrown onto a pay-per-view.
Yes, you're right. I guess I was already interested in like my interest in, for instance, like even Roderick Strong versus like Will Ospreay is more just based off of the match itself rather than what storytelling they told me to get there. That's definitely the case with Moxley versus Takeshita. The cage match with Copeland and Black, I think is interesting because of the cage stipulation. It's not the best looking card from AEW I've seen, but because we know that they, even the not best looking cards end up delivering really high quality, like I'm going to give it a chance.
So there are 10 matches so far. No matches have been announced yet for the pre-show. So we could see this increase between Rampage and Collision. But I like one thing I do feel is the idea of doing like a 10 match show, I think is more than sufficient. And not even just for the consumer of, you know, building up these shows and just for the experience. But I think you could certainly learn from just taking a program, and it doesn't have to be your biggest program. It doesn't have to be Swerve and Christian, but like an Adam Copeland and Malakai Black and doing the barbed wire cage match on TV. I think they need to be doing more of that, like angles that peak for television and do the big match and sacrifice your pay-per-view match. I don't know that if you took that match off of this pay-per-view, are the buys going down significantly versus are you enhancing your TV for a week? That's something that the viewer that is not spending $50 still gets a payoff to like a solid program that is hopefully going to entice your television audience as well. And maybe right now during the playoffs is not the best time to be doing that. But I think overall, like we're in crunch time now. Like TV should be the primary focus.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, I would be hesitant to like use that as like definite advice that I would give Tony Khan just because he continues to have to demand $50, unless of course you use a VPN. But $50 for these shows, and I could see his thinking having demanding audiences pay that amount of money. Well, why aren't you putting your biggest stars on this card? People do say that. You know, why isn't a Will Ospreay on this show? Why isn't an Adam Copeland on this show? Why wouldn't, a Jon Moxley be on this show? Like, there is that expectation from the audience if you're going to be asking them to spend that money to have every, like, your all-star cast, perform on every pay-per-view.
Well, I mean, like, look at this roster, though, and look what they're going to pay-per-view and TV with. Like, look at their amount of people that are out at the moment. Like, you're doing this without Adam Cole, without MJF, without Kenny Omega, without Eddie Kingston, without... Like, there's... you know, some very significant names. It's like they don't have Sting anymore. So,
that's not by choice.
It's not by choice, but I think that there is a balance to just your television strictly building to pay-per-view versus, you know, the occasional time. Like what was a major match in Dynamite history? It was, you know, they've had plenty of them, but one that just comes to mind is like Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa. And could that have gone on a pay-per-view? Of course it could, but you also are that many more people seeing a match like that. I think that just enhances your stars. It hopefully builds up your television, and it does give your free consumer something along the way as well, as sort of a...
Yeah, so this would have been much... Like, they were kind of doing something like this when they would have, like, these themed editions of Dynamites that were essentially sort of, like, almost like surrogates for your pay-per-views in between your tentpole pay-per-views, right? Now that they're trying to essentially do what almost feels like monthly pay-per-views, that's going to be a lot tougher. All your real estate and your TV time should be used towards building towards that next pay-per-view event. You're going to have less time to devote to pushing strictly TV programs, unfortunately.
Well, we have shared our thoughts, and now we're going to hear from you. If you want to get a super chat in, you are welcome to do so, and we will go to the forum and hear what everyone had to say about tonight's Dynamite.
Got a couple super chats here. First one from Jonathan Mayer, who sends $2 to say, love the new background, John.
Yes. Yeah, we have been busy at work trying to fill out the background. It was a little bare, so I've tried to do some updating.
I'm a big
fan.
Thank
you, Jonathan.
Thank you very much, Jonathan, for that. We go to Dan Hurley in the tourney, who sends $2 to say, why does Toni Storm keep switching face to heel?
I don't know if it's so much she is turning it. I think a lot of it is dictated by the audience. And I think tonight was just an indication that, listen, the audience is pretty pro Toni Storm most weeks. And I think why fight this going into Sunday? Like, it just puts Serena Deeb in this position that's not ideal. Let's make it very clear going into Sunday what the dynamic is, as opposed to this kind of, you know, spending the first portion of a match where you don't know how the audience is. Like, what are you playing to? Are you playing the heel in this match? And we have a very clear deciphering of the two.
I think Deonna Purrazzo was able to, like, and Thunder Rosa, they were able to weather it, no pun intended, pretty well, just because I think they're stronger baby faces. Deeb was probably having the most challenge because, like, she doesn't really have that much of an established character yet. So at this point, you have to ask, how many more people, strong baby faces, do you have, you know, in AEW? That coupled with just the fact that, like, Storm just continues to be so damn entertaining, you know, maybe it has led them to finally decide to just completely turn her. Who are the heels that you think she would be well paired with at this point?
Well, following that, I mean, you have this, again, Forbidden Door is the next show, and I see Toni Storm being involved heavily with, like, the whatever Stardom contingent we have, and you kind of have this Mariah May thing on the back burner as well. Like, that's a potential turn that you could see Mariah being the heel coming out of that. Mm-hmm. And further after, like, I think we also clearly have seen the, like, Mercedes is now pretty solidly placed as in a heel role as well. I don't know if that's a match they're going to be racing to get to with Tony and Mercedes, but that's a big match down the road that I think you could have the right stage for.
Yeah, Deonna Purrazzo is actually heel now too. So
yes,
I mean, there's that.
She's now in the Mob.
That's right. Yep. I guess they could do a Taya match again. You know. Who else is available? Nyla is always, I guess, somebody that they could go back to.
They always have Riho. She's can always be depended upon.
Yes, sure. Yeah.
For any role.
Sky Blue. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's go to forum.postwrestling.com.
Tenise, Roddy and Ospreay have heated up with their face-to-face last week and the recent post-angle beatdown. We all know this match will be fantastic, but it's great to have some build-up. I hope Death Triangle wins to restore the significance of the Trios belts. Hopefully Takeshita wins against Moxley, but you never know. Can we please do something meaningful with Brian Keith? That bloodbath looked brutal for Malakai. The Brian Sutnam match was fun, and we need more Sutnam on TV. I'd love to see him in a match with Ospreay. Lastly, I thought Cash would be the one to come out with a gun to make the save. Oh, man. Come on, Tenise. The pay-per-view cycle had its ups and downs, but Double or Nothing is sure to deliver.
He's not guilty. He's not guilty.
I mean, Bruce was there and gave us the blow-by-blow of that, and I watched the clip, and I was like, this is like the most bizarre reaction I can recall in some time. It's very, very weird.
Let's go up next to Mr. Kane, who says, happy birthday, Brian Danielson. He couldn't get the bear, but I'd say this was the next best thing. Satnam Singh was an entertaining big man, and I think he should get more reps on ROH or Rampage to build him up. Darby Allin with the flamethrower shouldn't be allowed, but it was. Awesome closing scene for tonight. The viscous liquid is back. Malakai versus O'Reilly was really good and different. I think Malakai was rather impressed with his opponent, and I smell a turn coming for Kyle in the immediate future. Oh, what does that mean? Kyle joins the House of Black? Huh. Can you see that?
Sure, yeah. He gives up his wedding ring, and he joins the House of Black.
Kyle O'Reilly in the House of Black. That would be interesting. Interesting. All right, the mind games from Cope was a nice touch post-match. What was also nice to see was the Swerve angle and the return of Prince Nana. Very cool, and I look forward to Swerve having a solid match with Christian. Respect to the women's tag match. Very entertaining. Good to see Saraya out there mixing it with Toni Storm. And a good promo package for Willow versus Monet. Solid dynamite.
All right, a thumbs up from Mr. Kane. We go to Matthew. Overall, I thought this was a decent show. Like most weeks, when looked at in a vacuum, AEW is a solid show. It's the bigger picture that's the issue. I feel as if AEW has been very heat-heavy. This product definitely needs a shot in the arm of some sort, which I believe will come in the form of MJF this Sunday. Nobody really feels hot right now, which is very evident by the ratings and attendance. I said this last week, but we definitely need more character depth, more defined baby faces and heels, and some solid week-to-week storytelling. I've been an AEW fan since day one, and it sucks that it has dropped to this level. Unfortunately, they have a huge hill to climb. I haven't had a chance to listen to Pollock and Thurston, so I apologize if this was covered, but has there been any update on AEW's television deal, and what do you feel like they will get? I feel like anything under $175 million a year for all three shows, tape library, ROH, and the pay-per-views will be a disappointment. Ideally, I feel like $200 would be a good deal. I mean, if they hit $175, I think they'll be exceptionally happy with that amount. In terms of what they're going to get, I mean, your guess is as good as anyone's. I think that there's still too many factors that have to be sorted out. Number one, it's WBD's position when it comes to the NBA, which is looking more and more slim of a chance that they're going to have the NBA. But as well, like AEW, they're still in an exclusive negotiating window with WBD. So they don't even have the opportunity to take these to the market and see what the interest is. And I think from covering all of these like rights renewals, like you just don't know. There's the obvious players, but then there's the non-obvious ones. And you just don't know if there's going to be that offer that none of us are focused on that comes out of left field and could be a game changer for an AEW. It's but it's also not like a guarantee either that they're going to hit like some magic number that they're aiming for as well.
Yeah. Do you think that there's like even a target number that for you to be able to say this was a good deal versus this was not a good deal?
I think it'll fluctuate based on what the deal entails, because there's one for just the television and then it's the pay-per-views as well. Like if they are entering into an agreement where Max is going to take the pay-per-views in-house and they no longer have to sell pay-per-views, well, we know what like WWE is getting paid for their pay-per-views on Peacock, and that's probably, you know, not going to be the same comparison point, but you know, that drastically increases things. It takes a lot of pressure off of AEW if they just get some great figure and it's Max is going with the idea, this is our entryway into pay-per-view, and we're going to spend a stupid amount of money for these pay-per-views.
And not having the pressure to like ask people for $50 a month, I think will be a huge, you know, weight off of Tony's shoulders, you know, and that would allow them to take a lot more chances for the TV. I mean, anyway, it would completely change like the model of like storytelling too. But yeah, there are a lot of ways to slice this pie is I think what you're trying to say, John.
Yeah, I think the higher you're getting above that 100 to 115 million, like above that, I think they're into a very positive place. Like once you're looking at, you know, well into like those figures above 100 million. But yes, that's going to be a massive story this year, is how these AEW rights pan out. But thank you very much for the question, Matthew.
And, lastly, do you expect an MJF return for Sunday?
I mean, I'm sure he's keeping it very, very close to the vest when he's ready to come back. I think that that's always a viable possibility.
Do you put much into like recent photos of him with his arm in a sling?
Some, but not completely with MJF. I would state that it's, I think it's possible. He's also someone that could come back before he's physically ready. And just to have that presence on your show would be advantageous. I think he is sorely missed in AEW. And I think that he is, I think a lot are kind of looking at, you know, he had a very polarizing title run from just a creative standpoint. But I think from a business standpoint, I think his title run holds up very well.
Yeah.
Been very consistent this year. His absence has been noted.
I definitely think the show is missing him, you know, because he brings a very different type of personality that's not really being fulfilled right now on the show. And I know last year they teased it, but a Swerve versus MJF feud is going to be the thing that can really elevate Swerve to that next level. Because Forbidden Door is the next cycle, maybe this is not like the best time to bring MJF back, but I could see him coming back at Forbidden Door, you know, to lead into the next thing.
Which is in Long Island.
There you go. You would almost expect him back by then. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. You'll have plenty of shows coming up in the next couple of days. Rewind Away on Thursday, covering Extreme Rules 2012. Then Friday, Rewind to SmackDown, King and Queen of the Ring on Saturday. And then Sunday, we have Double or Nothing. How do we get into this?
Well, it feels like our week is just starting here. You know, what are we recording? Like several, we don't take breaks here. We record every single day, pretty much.
That's it. That's how me and Wei stay in contact with one another. But that will wrap up the show. Thanks to everyone for tuning in live. We are here every Wednesday after Dynamite. And of course, make your way on over to the Post Wrestling Cafe. The best cafe that your money can bring you. Daily, wonderful updates, shows, everything. Commercial free. If you're sick of those ads, boom.
That's right. Yeah, you get these shows commercial free. We don't really mention that enough, you know.
We don't mention half the stuff we do. It's just bonus stuff for everybody out there.
Yeah. Sign up, see what you get. Hopefully you like it.
Do it. Don't. No pressure. But we will judge you if you don't. That is it. Goodbye.